shyness is nice, and shyness can stop you from doing all the things in life you'd like to.
Coming up next, we have a song called Ain't Got No Home. A song you might notice it's quite a well-known song. It's on the soundtrack of The Lost Boys, and it's been used in various things. It's by a gentleman who goes by the name of Clarence Henry, or to give him his full title, Clarence Frogman Henry, from New Orleans. This is from 1957, and it's called
I Got No Home. Ribbit.
Ooh, ain't got no home. I know a place to roam. Ain't got no home. I know a place to roam. I'm a lonely boy. I ain't got a home. I got a voice. I love to sing. I sing like a girl. And I sing like a frog. I'm a lonely boy. I ain't got a home.
Word from the listener is please stop. Ah, yeah. Please stop.
How fantastic is that song?
The Frogman, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know how it revealed itself to you, this Frogathon.
The Frogathon?
Yeah. I'm walking down thinking, well, this is a very catchy, perhaps late 1950s, quasi rock and roll, New Orleans jazz infused, you know, track, enjoying that. Oh, he's just gone up a few notches. Oh, he's really gone up. Yeah. He's gone so high pitched. This is ridiculous. Oh! He's gone right down. He's croaking.
Yeah.
He sounds insane.
Yes.
And didn't it occur to you, I thought, hold on, what's the next verse going to be like? I expected him to come out and sing in Geordie.
Yeah.
And then he goes, I ain't got no home, like.
So were you taken by surprise by the bit where he sings high and sings very low?
Yeah.
Even though in the second verse he says,
I sing like a lady.
I can sing like a girl. Mm-hmm. Or I can sing
like a frog.
But you didn't expect him to actually prove
that. No, I didn't.
That's because he doesn't listen.
I don't listen. Yeah. I didn't listen to that, no. Yeah. Right. No, in fact, I was probably thinking about, you know, oh, midlife, God. What am I gonna
yeah.
You know, I wasn't thinking about that at all.
Now, I've loved this song for a very long time. Yeah. I heard it on The Lost Boys and then I kind of forgot about it. And then
Is that a Peter Pan film?
No.
Okay.
It's vampires, isn't it?
Is it?
Vampires, yeah. It's got lots of people called Corey in it.
Okay.
Yeah, I know the type.
What's his name? Kiefer Sutherland.
Oh, is he in
it? Yeah. Mm. It's kind of one of them Brat Pack 80s things.
Okay.
Which I haven't seen since the 80s. But I had this album called Chess, The Best of Chess R&B or something, years and years ago, which had that on it. And a magnificent thing it is, And then some years after that, I was in a shop and I saw this, which is a CD. The best of Clarence Frogman Henry.
Yeah.
18 tracks on there.
Yeah.
And describe the front cover.
Well, there is a frog on the front.
Yes.
There's a frog in a sort of purple tuxedo kind of thing, in a mic with some spotlights shining on him.
He looks a bit dishevelled, the frog, to be honest.
Yeah.
Sort of a Tom Waitsian frog.
Yeah.
And miserable.
Yeah.
What doesn't need to be miserable?
Well, it's a happy frog. So based on that cover.
Yeah.
And the song you've heard. There's 18 tracks. The best of Clarence Frogman Henry.
Yeah.
How many of those 18 tracks do you think, based on the frog picture and everything, how many of those songs?
And he's built his full reputation on Frogman. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what he's known as.
I'm going for 16.
You reckon 16 and 18 have a Frogman sound?
Yeah, I think he'll have one ballad which he can't really squeeze a frog into. and maybe one anthemic one that's very serious and I Love America and think it'd be disrespectful to us.
Well, I reckon there'll be an instrumental to throw us off there.
A little bit.
I think he might go through a range of amphibious noises.
Right, okay.
So I think there's...
maybe a few newts and salamanders.
Newton here and there. So I'm going to go for 14 out of 14.
There's one.
Wow.
One. That song you've just heard is the only song on that album.
Hugely disappointing.
It is. I mean, imagine how disappointed I was when we got home.
Did you rush down to the Trey's description department?
Oh, where's the rest of the frog song?
Would any of the other songs have been made worse by having a frog voice on it?
Would any song?
No.
Hold on. You say that. Hold on. The frog chorus.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yes.
That wasn't much good. Yeah. A frog's all through it.
It might have been better if Paul McCartney sang in a frog's voice.
Yeah, much better.
Oh, definitely. I mean, well, any song by Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
But, not really fair.
I mean, there are actually songs on here. I mean, forgetting about the fact that there's no more frog vocals on it.
Mm.
Is
it any good?
It's very, very serviceable. In fact, it's excellent. Dave Bartholomew style. New Orleans, late 50s, early 60s R&B. It's fantastic.
Mm.
Lots of the songs sound like a lot like Fats Domino, which is no bad thing. I've got this is a box set of the Cosimo Matassa story. Matassa was a guy who had a studio in New Orleans.
Okay.
Who recorded Dave Bartholomew, T-Bone Walker, Fats Domino, Little Richard, Clarence Frogman Henry, all recorded in the same studio. Mm. And there's lots of Alan Toussaint stuff and the early...
Any frog songs on there?
Well, the Frogman Henry's on there.
So in his repertoire, he's only got the one frog song.
I've only been able to find one. Yeah.
Right,
it was his first hit. That's how he made his name.
Ah, I see.
But then probably after that, he was trying to lose. You know, I don't want to just do the frog thing.
No, but he should.
Stop billing yourself as Frogman. Amazingly, he's still going.
Is he?
He's still going.
I'd like to think that he wears some sort of...
uniform.
I was thinking, you know, one of those old-fashioned diver's helmets and flippers. Maybe he's moving in that frogman direction.
Oh, I see. Just subverting the genre.
Yeah. So he's not the frog sound.
You wouldn't really be able to hear him sing if he did that, would he?
You'd mic him up and sing.
But in 1969, he released an album called Clarence Frogman Henry is Alive and Well.
He's no longer a fucking frog.
No, it's Clarence Frogman Henry is alive and well, living in New Orleans and still doing his thing. And he still is. I found some footage on YouTube of him singing that very song just a couple of years ago. Still, he looks amazing for a 77-year-old guy.
Yeah.
So he's clearly doing him good.
High notes.
He sings like a girl, and he sings like a frog. He talks the talk, and he can walk the walk. And I've also found another thing. You might know a couple of other songs, because the first song on here is called I Don't Know Why I Love You, But I Do. That's it.
But that one wasn't his original, though, was it?
I think it was, yeah.
Was it?
No, the big hit. I think that was him. Yeah,
my word.
I was pleased to find that his house in New Orleans, I read here, is filled with frog memorabilia.
He's a frog!
Sent by fans from all over the world.
Oh,
so I might try and send him a frog.
Eric Cantona.
Boom, boom.
A bit racist.
That's all
right. Just a point here.
Oh.
We were talking about Paul McCartney there. Do you know what another link between Clarence the Frogman Henry and Paul McCartney is?
No.
They
both played with Ringo Starr.
They're the same man.
No, to both of those. No, he opened for the Beatles on 18 of their concerts in America.
Did he?
Beatles' backing band.
Wow. I found out a little interesting fact about him.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, about that song. Apparently, that song I read has part of it has been was stolen by Rod Stewart.
Well, yes, I...
Now, can I just
please
say...
Please do,
yeah. Because I'm all about the research, as you know.
Yeah.
So I read that Some Guys Have All The Luck by Rod Stewart steals part of that song.
Right.
So I thought, oh, that'd be quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I found on YouTube Rod Stewart, Some Guys Have All The Luck. And
is that
I,
the same... Must be the same Robert Palmer song, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. And I started listening... Oh, fucking dreadful.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, I tried to find it, but if it wasn't in the first 30 seconds, it's not in it. So I didn't hear it.
Well, yeah. I read that as well.
I know that song. I can't imagine. It melodically lifts some of the melody, I don't know.
It said it's on the chorus. Well, it's nothing to do with it.
Yeah. Well, did you read that as well then? Is that in Wikipedia?
Wikipedia,
yeah.
As was, it's because it's got a checkered present, that song. In that it's the theme song for Rush Limbaugh, you know, the horrible right-wing American shock joke. Yeah, Ain't Got a Home. He does Homeless Hour, and he plays that as the theme song for. I don't think it's a sort of, you know, a compassionate piece on the homeless.
Particularly not when he starts. People are going to stop taking it seriously when he sings like a frog, aren't they?
You'd have thought so.
Yeah, yeah, and also you might know. I was quite excited again a long time ago. I bought this CD of the band. It was a kind of a compilation of the band, and he said, Ain't Got No Home. I said, oh, I wonder if that's kind of the Frogman Henry song. Mm. They've got a lot of very, very talented singers in the band. Yeah, I bet there's someone in that band who can sing like, certainly people who can sing like a girl if you've listened to some of their harmonies, and surely someone must be able to sing like a frog.
Of course.
My money would be on Leave On Helm, I reckon.
Right, yeah.
They just sing it straight.
No frog, no
high voices, no low voices, and...
Yeah. The market's wide open, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wide open, so someone to come forward with their croaks and really frog it out there.
Yeah.
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 Starting already.
Yeah.
Bye
bye.
Oh, forget it. Certain periods of musical history get more fascinating the further away they are. You know, people who were there tell their stories to start filling all the gaps, because we've all become sort of pop historians, aren't we, of certain times. And I'm not sure there was a more incredible time than 1976 to 1978 in London and around England, around the punk scene. And I can't seem to get enough about learning about that period of history. So when I was at a loose end in Liverpool the other week, and I...
You didn't call me, did you?
No. I have to try to avoid you. And I was strolling around a very, very cheap bookshop. I saw a book called My Amazing Adventures with the Sex Pistols by Dave Goodman. No idea who Dave Goodman was, but I thought, quid, that I'm in.
That's quite a lot for you.
I know.
It's
well,
an
I was,
investment.
Yeah. I was hoping it was going to be 50p, but I thought, well, we'll stretch it. Turns out that Dave Goodman is the man who accidentally fell into being the Sex Pistols road manager and producer.
Yeah.
So he was just around London at the time with a van and a PA, and someone said, can you do this group? You know, they're playing at this pub. And he turned up, and it was the Sex Pistols' like second concert. He then went on to be the road manager and, as I say, sound man, more or less until they split up. And more crucially, he produced... Now, if you ever wondered, you ever got the Great Rock and Roll Swindle, the album, as I did, and wondered why the hell some of those songs were on it, like Give Me No Lips, Child, and I'm Stepping Stone and all that, they were all the Dave Goodman produced songs that when they came round to doing the Great Rock and Roll Swindle, obviously they had nothing, because the Sex Pistols hadn't really operated as a recording group for quite some time. I still don't understand where No One Is Innocent came from, and who wrote that, but putting that to one side, they went back to Dave Goodman and said, well, what have you got that's not already been released?
Mm.
Anyway, some interesting bits of the book, some tidbits if you like, was that Malcolm McLaren tried to get Syd Barrett to produce the group at some point.
Wow, that would have been interesting, wouldn't it?
That would have been interesting. Unfortunately, Syd Barrett didn't have a clue what he was talking about. And when he was talking about the Sex Pistols, he started talking about the situation in the Middle East.
Easily confused.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah, yeah. Yeah. But I mean, did you know things like the Pistols played a gig at Chelmsford Prison?
Mm?
At 4 o'clock in the afternoon, played at Chelmsford Prison. Anyway, I thought the most intriguing statement in the book was this. And I read, can you imagine how amazing it would have been if my wild version of Anarchy had come out on a 12-inch vinyl with my full-length 7-minute No Fun on the flip side? Possibly the heaviest 45 ever released up to this point. But no, others thought they knew best. But I tell you this, get hold of my unfinished mix of Anarchy. It's the one that starts Bible quotation number one. Another idea of mine. Then compare it to the later Chris Thomas version and tell me I'm wrong.
Is he right then? Is that the definitive version of Anarchy in the UK, would you say?
No.
I agree, no. No, I like the one.
Yeah, I like the one.
I mean, I like that too. And I think the one of the things on there that would have even improved the Nevermind the Bollocks version would have been Bible quotation number one sneered out at the start. Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
I think I like the drums better on that one.
I don't like the vocals as much on that one. They're not as clear, and they sound like the double tracked got some effects on them. They sound less live than the version.
It's a bit more tinny than the one at the end was a bit more finessed. It had more body, if that's a musical term.
Well,
I suppose it is.
One of the reasons why Nevermind the Bollocks still sounds so fantastic today, and other albums of the era, for example, The Clash's first one, which does sound tinny, the songs are great, but it doesn't sound great today, it doesn't sound very powerful. Nevermind the Bollocks certainly does. I think it's because of the production, and there's a lot, I mean, the guy, Chris Thomas,
isn't
it? He put a lot of guitars on it.
Yes, he did.
And he's quoted somewhere, I've said that sometimes there's up to 12 guitars. On some of those tracks.
But don't you think that Nevermind the Bollocks, the drum sound sounds very tubby? I mean, hitting tubs is what I mean, rather than...
I can see what you're saying, there's a lot of attack
Whereas
on that.
I thought the drums sounded much richer and rounded.
You know what he said about... Because the ending...
It's distinctive, I thought. I like the drum sound. You know,
it is?
I like the Paul Cook when we saw him with Edwin Collins. In fact, he's got a distinctive drum sound, and it's more the sound of the actual drums rather than the way he plays them. I think he uses a lot of the floor toms and those things. You know,
but
it's the way he's got them tuned. I think I don't know.
Interestingly enough,
drums.
Interestingly enough,
it better be named three times.
One thing I found fascinating, he was talking about recording Anakin, and I love little bits like this. He said they were getting to the end and thinking, well, how do we make the crescendo? Because he got a really big crescendo at the end.
Yeah.
So they said the first time they did it, Dave Gummer said, well, why don't you smash up the guitar? And he's got that great Gibson Les Paul.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I'm not smashing that up. And they had to get Malcolm agree that he would buy him another one if he smashed it up.
Yeah.
So they did smash it up, and he said, well, that was great. But then the next day he thought, well, it's great, but it's not quite what we're after. And so what they did, and listening to it, I don't believe this, but he said, when they hit the last destroy, Paul Cook ran off the drum stool, got his drumsticks, and whacked away at the strings of Steve Jones's guitar until whenever. Right. And he said, that's what's on that mix.
Right. Well, there was some interesting guitar stuff. But I'm going back to the Nevermind, I like the fact that on there, it kind of ends and Johnny's still singing.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, there's some interesting stuff about the production of Nevermind the Bollocks, because it's produced by two people. Have you ever noticed on the credits it says produced by Chris Thomas? It doesn't say produced by Chris Thomas and Bill Price. It says produced by Chris Thomas or Bill Price.
Mm.
Do you know why that is?
No.
Shall I tell you?
Oh, good.
This is from an interview.
Thank God it wasn't expecting me to tell anyone.
An interview with Bill Price. He says, it was down to Malcolm McLaren. The simple fact of the matter was that Chris was hired by Malcolm to do a series of singles for the Sex Pistols. I was hired by Malcolm to do a series of album tracks for the Sex Pistols. Life got slightly complicated because I did a few album tracks that Chris then remade as singles. Also, Chris started a couple of tracks which got abandoned as singles, so I remade them to be used as album tracks. So basically, you see, a lot of them were started by one of them and finished by the other.
And as Dave will tell you in his book, it was his version of I Wanna Be Me that was on the B-side, and he never got the credit for it, as he endlessly tells you in the book.
Right. But he says, he said the two of them couldn't quite understand why Malcolm kept chopping and changing his mind between different versions of different songs, and then it dawned on the two of them that Malcolm was basically trying to slip between two stools and not pay even. So they told Malcolm, I'll tell you what, Malcolm, whatever's on the Sex Pistols album, it was either done by me or by Chris. You just pay us both and we'll divvy it out amongst our little selves, which is what they did. But also the sleeve, he said the sleeve was printed long before it was finally decided which version of each song they were actually going to put on the record, and that's why it says produced by Bill Price. Or Chris Thomas.
What came across interesting in the book was that from day one, he thought they were fantastic. So all this guff about, they couldn't play and what have you, absolute nonsense. He said they could go into any room, and they went into lots of rooms where they were very hostile.
Yeah.
And they would usually win the crowd over by the end. So they were amazing. And what I was inspired to do after reading that was, you know, the Winterland concert, the last concert they ever played, which apocryphally, if that's the right word, when we heard about that at school, what I understand to be the case is that Johnny Rotten walked on, saying you're getting one song, they played No Fun, he hit the deck, said, ever get the feeling you've been cheated, ha ha ha, walked off because they only played one song. Of course, that's nonsense. They played a full set
and then
came on for the encore. But the whole concert is on YouTube, Winterland, and they're amazing.
There's a film called DOA, Dead on Arrival, which has got loads of that Winterland. I remember seeing that on Channel 4, 10th anniversary of punk. You know, obviously quite a long time ago.
Yeah.
I had it on VHS for a while. I know, so they're pretty good, but the audience are fairly hostile and Sid's off his nut.
Yeah.
Talking of films, the Rock and Roll Swindle film, did you know that that was played in full at Ian Curtis's wake?
How very strange.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Mm-hmm. Factet for you.
Rest in peace, Ian.
Congratulations! You're listening to the Trust the Wizards podcast!
Pablo Diaz Recha from the Canary Islands. He makes records under the name El Guincho. I have a song I'm going to play from his 2008 album Alegranza. The song is called Cuando Maravilla Fui. Apologies for my Spanish. Translated, I think that means When Wonder Went. I put the lyrics, the Spanish lyrics for this song, into Google Translate, and this is what Google Translate came back with. They leave when they know that's the best time when, and the road have. They will always try to destroy. Everywhere they go, something new will happen. With the Indians, know how to act. Diving legs up on the streets, where no one will know how to let go. To see them go, to the, alas, prepared waiting. You go through your sight and with sword. Snake bites you in the attic. They'll bite, they bite, van. I do not try to hide from what comes. What comes is yours. And who are, you should end. Who stays and who would be saved. Yesterday and today went great shadow.
I'm not afraid to die.
Sounds like the party band for the World Cup. Bit of Tropicália going
Samba.
On, bit Animal Collective thing going on. I really like that. Really very good.
The geographical, I'm not particularly up on the geographic, where exactly the Canary Islands are, but they're not mainland Spain, obviously, because they're islands, I guess. They're closer to Africa than they are to Europe.
Yeah.
Nowhere near South America, are they?
No.
It's a top of
that. But there's that Tropicália
there's a bit of African music in there as well.
Bizarrely enough, there's a bit of New York Italian towards the end of the song. Didn't it not strike you as odd at all that you had this, as you say, fantastic driving rhythm? You could imagine being in Copacabana Beach, marching down the street with, on Mardi Gras, is it Mardi Gras they have down there?
Well, that sort of thing.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Well, you could imagine.
Carnival.
Yeah. And then in the background, initially, this sort of wailing kicked in, and it got louder and louder and louder. And then you realise that this was a sample of what seemed like a microphone hidden in a juke joint in New York in about 1955, with Italians singing and playing not mandolins, but you know, some stringed instrument. Yeah. And thinking, well, that's a very odd juxtaposition.
Yeah.
And that completely took over, and you ended on a crooner. I'm saying a New York Italian. He sounded like that.
Yeah.
How do those two things fit together? How does he possibly justify that?
I don't know. But I read an article with this guy a long time ago, and he was talking about buying records for samples, and he was saying basically he buys a lot of very, very rare, very, very expensive records just so that he can make sure that he's not sampling something that other people have sampled before.
Guided by Voices on there, then.
You've bought all them.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Maybe you bought the drum kit.
I did do a little bit of research about this fella because I've not heard him. I like the song very much. I'm not sure that I believe what I found.
Oh, what did you find out?
Well, one fact that I've got about him is that apparently he's an expert lullaby singer. Did you find this?
Unless he was actually singing that second half.
An expert lullaby singer across Spanish-speaking countries.
Right. Well, you mean you could hire him?
Do you have
a kid who's not sleeping well?
Or possibly you do it live, but I would imagine he's recorded the lullaby, so rather than...
Oh, right, yeah.
But you know...
Oh, good thing,
cheaper,
yeah.
Probably cheaper.
Yeah, I also thought I'd look up the name of the album, because I like the album, which we've got in front of you. We're talking about...
Alegranza,
yeah.
What's that then?
What's that? Yeah, it's a good question, because I got a bit confused, because I found that, and I thought, oh, look at these reviews. And I've got a review here which says, no bad days in Alegranza, which I thought was quite a nice It turns out Alegranza actually is a holiday destination in Mexico, albeit one that is very highly recommended by, for example, Maureen Victoria of Canada.
Oh, well, if you're listening, Maureen,
hats
off to you.
And of course, you've got to say the cover to the album is striking. As you'd imagine, it's very, very colourful.
Yeah.
And it's largely dominated by a parrot with some explosives in the background. I believe they're called fireworks.
Yes.
He's at a carnival. But the odd thing about it is the parrot has 9 eyes.
Does it, yeah.
That's an old Bobby V hit, isn't it?
The parrot has nine eyes.
But a cat has 9 lives. The parrot has 9 eyes.
Yeah,
and is it?
The 9-eyed parrot features again on the actual CD as well. But he's looking. He's looking in the other direction.
And he's looking in every direction.
Got a very big hole in his head there. Look.
No, that's his beak.
Oh no, it's the centre of the disc.
Oh yeah, that's the middle of the CD there. That's where. Yeah, that's where you put the little.
You need
little
that
man inside the CD player. Who runs around and keeping it turning so fast.
Space Age Exotica. Tropicália.
France.
Afrobeat dub, Tropicália, and rock and roll is what he's mixing, apparently.
Oh, I think there's trance in it as well.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Didn't we prove on a previous podcast that you didn't really know what trance
was? I have no idea, but I do feel fairly confident with songs like that.
Are you now going to say it sounds like the Star Council?
I didn't know elements.
The Star Council. He'll be sampling
well,
the Star
Council. Kickers question time.
Everybody's favourite part of the show.
Oh, right.
Let's remind you, because it's been a while since we had a Kickers question time, let alone a Kickers
question answer.
Time. So the two questions from last time were, the first one involved Love, the band. Love the band.
Love the band.
Love the band. Yes. Love the band lived together at one point in a house formerly belonging to which actor? Did you find this out?
No, it's not on the internet.
Oh dear.
Why is it not on the internet?
I got it
from a book.
I completely didn't.
You remember them?
Yeah, I completely didn't even try to find out because I forgot the question, but I'm going to guess.
I'll give you a clue because I'll tell you that.
Is it a male actor?
It is, and the house was called The Castle. The Castle.
The right. King, then, or the Elvis Presley. Marlon Brando.
Is it Los Angeles? They were a California band, right?
Yeah, I don't know where the house was, to be honest.
I'm going Gregory Peck.
Okay. It wasn't Gregory Peck.
Charlie Chaplin?
No. It was Bela Lugosi.
Oh! Yeah. He's dead, you know.
He's not well. Yeah. There you go. So that was that one. Nobody got that.
I got the next one, though.
You did get
I knew this one when you asked us.
You did.
Can I see if I knew it as well?
Okay.
I
think I told
you. So the question
my
was,
not great.
Where did the Ramones, who have been in the news recently, of course, where did the Ramones name come from?
Is it linked to the person who've already referenced in this podcast, or maybe in a podcast
yes.
recently, Mr. Paul McCartney?
It is.
Because that was his name, or his old...
I told you this. Don't
steal
my point.
I'm sounding intelligent now, aren't I? Isn't that fantastic?
Go on.
Let me think it through.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll jump in.
God, you might as well. I didn't know the rest of it.
Paul Ramon, without the E, was the name that he used to check into hotels
That's
so people
correct.
Wouldn't know he was Paul McCartney.
That's absolutely right.
And do you know what John Lennon often used to check in as?
Was it Spaniard in the Works?
That's a book he wrote.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Winston O'Boogie.
Oh,
yes.
That's right. Yes. You had told me that before.
Yeah. Winston was his middle name.
Well, before we get on...
And Anna Ono.
Yeah, okay.
Later.
Calm down with your Beatles knowledge.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we get on to the new questions, I've also... We should highlight the fact that we regularly on a Monday send out our popcorn double feature.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
The two videos that have a hidden link.
Yeah, we must do. We must have a database of answers to that because there must be hundreds of them now.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of confused people out there.
Well, there are
me included.
There are lots of disengaged people, let's put it that way. But anyway, we have had some input.
We did. Didn't I get one right?
You got one
right,
yeah.
I got one right.
You did get one right. In fact, but apart from you getting it right, which is nice, and I can't remember...
It was quite an easy one.
Was it?
Because all you had to do was listen to the two songs, and you would get the link, because they both mentioned trucks in the, song,
that's
in the lyrics.
Right.
Yeah,
it was Pavement and
Silver Jews.
Yeah, that's true.
And you told me that the link wasn't, but they both had people from Pavement in the band.
That's true, yeah, I did say that. And it was trucks, but it's actually that they both referenced the band
Royal
Trucks.
Yeah, was it Royal Trucks. Yeah.
But actually, although you did get that, we also had a listener who got that, which is much more exciting.
It is, yeah.
And so we should say well done to Adelina Kavanagh, answered that question correctly on Twitter.
Well done.
And did she get any kind of prize?
She gets her name read out in that rather splendid way.
Excellent.
Wonderful. Well done to her.
Yeah. We also had another person who got a link on Twitter.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I put up a couple of tracks, one by Sally Crew, and one by the New York band Nada Surf, asking what the connection was. And one Douglas Gillard...
Of course, Julius.
Yes, to say that he played on both those records.
This will be Doug Gillard from XTV.
Indeed, yes. Ah. Yeah. So well done to him. Yeah. All right. Well, so are you ready for the two questions? I'm
raring to go.
I have, as you can imagine, listener, I have a huge black book full of interesting connections.
Should we just say a few words about the passing of Tommy Ramone before we...
I think that would be appropriate. Yes, okay, before we get into the black book, let's put our black hats on.
Yeah, so
black ties.
We're not condemning him.
No, black ties.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
We're mourning. Yeah. Mourning.
Is there any other band who've been... who've had all the four band members die separately? I mean,
let's be respectful for a second.
Yeah.
Tommy Ramone, the last living member of the Ramones, because Johnny's gone... Joey's gone.
Dee's gone.
Dee's gone. Marky's gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was Marky just gone. No, Tommy's
gone.
Tommy's gone. Still trying to be respectful. So that's a very, very sad thing. But but you know, there is a quiz in this, I think, somewhere. Sharitha, you were saying.
Yeah. So are there any other bands where all the band members have died
Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Fairly, yeah. But didn't some of them die in the same
plane
thing?
Crash? You can't. Plane crashes don't count.
That doesn't count. If they like the Marquesas, who were all killed in the plane crash that killed Otis Redding, that doesn't count.
Doesn't count.
No, but like died separately.
Mark Bolan.
He's one person.
The big Amy, the whole band dead. Whole band.
Amy Winehouse.
Yeah.
No, that doesn't count.
That band's not
a group. Oh. You know, you need to have three or four.
Sorry. Going back to Tyrannosaurus.
The New York Dolls.
Who was the other bloke in the...
The New York Dolls, aren't they all dead?
Nah, it's only...
They're not dead.
They seem to die for the fair.
No.
The drummer died. Killer Kane's just died. Jonathan just died. But Sylvain still alive.
Yeah,
David Johansen still alive.
Yeah,
still
they're still okay. As the New York Dolls.
Yeah.
Well, about the Beatles. Except for Ringo Starr.
Yeah. And Paul McCartney. Yeah.
And Paul McCartney.
One of my favourite ever letters to the Viz was...
Sparks. Apart from the two blokes who are still alive.
Yeah. One of my favourite ever letters to Viz was somebody who wrote in pointing out that the Who had a deceased drummer and a deceased bass player, whereas the Beatles had still a remaining a drummer and a bass player, so they should join. The Who and the Beatles should join together, and it should be called the Hoogles.
As we said, we're keeping it respectful. Now, hold on. I know you're desperate to get your own self-aggrandising
jingle.
But before we do that, I do have the two questions. Well, and I thought, since you've been banging on about the Sex Pistols, I should have a Sex Pistols
fantastic
question. Now, I think you might know this, but if you do, you'll have to keep it to yourself. So my first question this time around is, we talked quite a lot about the start of the Sex Pistols and their recordings and stuff, but here's my question. What song did Johnny Rotten audition for the Sex Pistols with? And, for as a bonus point, do not say, and as a bonus point, what was he wearing? Okay, so
I don't know the song, but I know the artist.
Okay,
and
keep it to yourself.
Sang it along to a
jukebox. Keep it to yourself. Chorizo Garbanzo. Yeah. So what song did Johnny Rotten audition for the Sex Pistols with, and what was he wearing? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And my second question, since we talked about Paul McCartney, I thought, how about a question
once again
about the Beatles? Yeah. Okay. So the Beatles, From Me to You. You remember that one?
Yeah.
Was number one in
1963.
But what was the next number one in the UK that was a song of under 2 minutes in length? Okay.
Right.
So From Me to You, under 2 minutes in length, number one in 1963. What was the next song, less than 2 minutes long, that then became number one in the UK? Get your thinking hats on and let us know, specifically by Twitter, because we like that very much.
Kickers question time!
On the street, 50 that and then I'm trying to turn a trick, 50 that and then
The Ramones there, of course, and I've been surprisingly angered this week. I know you know me as that tolerant chap,
yeah,
who
very mild-mannered, yeah.
Mom accepts most things without any sort of rant. But do you know what really fucks me off?
Oof.
No.
Well, amongst the many things that fuck me off is the this
Polishography.
Yes, prolification. Yes. Bloody kids wearing Ramones t-shirts who don't know who's in the band, don't know any songs, never heard any records, don't fucking wear the t-shirt. It's not appropriate.
Do you know?
Hello. Yes, hello, man sitting next to you wearing a Ramones t-shirt.
No, you see, that's all right because you...
He's in the
Ramones. I like the Ramones and I own Ramones.
I don't think you should... My point is you should not be able to wear... should not be allowed to wear... a band t-shirt if you don't know who the band is.
But I don't know if you're familiar with the shop Pulp.
No. I'm aware of the band Pulp and I'd wear one of their t-shirts.
Yes, because you've earned the right.
Yeah, I have.
The shop Pulp, right, is wall-to-wall rock band t-shirts. But, I mean, you know, Velvet Underground, Joy Division, Nirvana, all those classic t-shirts.
Yeah.
Obviously without the tour dates on the back. That would be ridiculous. Yeah. And the kids are lapping it up.
Do they know these bands?
I would suggest, well, the person who bought a Ramones t-shirt who was with me did know them because I'd force-fed them Ramones from an early age.
Then that's fine.
That's okay.
Hang on a minute. But surely if, the Ramones logo, forget about AC/DC and all the others, but they're just talking about Ramones. Ramones logo has become, like it or not, it's become a kind of design classic. And it's a thing.
Well, you say like it or not.
Well, okay, but people want to wear it, and if more people are wearing it, that means a percentage of those people, no matter what that percentage is, might be very, very small, but a percentage of those people might see the t-shirt and be more inclined to go out and look, what is this Ramones thing?
And go
listen to some Ramones, and that might be into the Ramones.
I don't think that's the case. I think people are wearing that logo and they think it's a logo in the same way that the Nike swoosh is a logo. Or
they've made some great records with the Nike swoosh.
If they haven't, they should do. Because I've been well into that. And actually, what a really good way to go, because you're on your t-shirt.
But the thing is,
this is the Nike swoosh podcast talking to you.
It's 50 grand there.
If some kid wears the t-shirt and one of his mates sees the t-shirt, goes home, Googles the Ramones and starts thinking, this is fucking great, this is great music, in the same way that we discovered it, however we discovered that music.
Did we discover anything from t-shirts? Did we really?
You couldn't get t-shirts then. That was pre-t-shirts.
No t-shirts back in the day.
Used to wear animal skin wrapped around yourself.
Yeah. I'm sure that I can't think of an example, but I'm sure when I was at school or when I was in sixth form college, there would have been people who I knew who I might have seen around wearing a t-shirt and it might have made me more right, he likes that band. It might make me more inclined to listen to their music.
But the whole point of that
is, I remember
the whole premise there is based on the assumption that the person wearing the t-shirt that we've seen likes that band. So if that is the law that you like the band to wear the t-shirt, then fine, you can learn about music. If you can wear any fucking t-shirt and then you see, oh look, he likes the Ramones. No, he doesn't. He doesn't even know who the Ramones are. So the whole thing falls down. It collapses. I have to say, for my lad,
so would you
Kicker
be
allowed, Junior? Yeah. Kicker Junior has three band t-shirts, right? All of which I've bought him.
Yeah,
and
none of which he likes.
He loves them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Paper Nut Cambridge.
Who were they?
The band.
Yeah.
Personal Best. The Love band them, yeah. And Guided by Voices, right? He's got three band t-shirts, and before I let him wear the t-shirt, I made him listen to the record. And
does he like the records?
He doesn't like.
But you said he had to like the records.
Yeah, well, no, I need to be aware of the records.
Aware of
the records. And the reason he's got those, I've got too many t-shirts. So sometimes when you buy an album, it's like an album and a t-shirt offer.
True.
So I get a teeny tiny one, and he can have it, see. So he's got a superb Guided by Voices t-shirt, which says that the club is open on the front. It's got a set list on the back. Oh, what a beautiful thing that is. Small only, so I couldn't have it.
Chorizo Junior the older of the two Chorizo Jr.
Led Zeppelin fan, I understand.
Oh, that no, that's Chorizo Jr. Jr. He's got a Led Zeppelin, and it actually says Led Zeppelin Tour 1974.
Yeah, yeah. He did well to be at that, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, he remembers it well, yeah. The Chorizo Jr., the older one, he used to have a Clash t-shirt, which I bought him, which doesn't fit him anymore. He does like loud guitar music. He wouldn't be able to tell the Clash from the Pistols.
He's a Chuck Prophet fan, isn't he?
I tell you what he really likes. We've discussed before on here, he quite likes Bruce Springsteen. Mm. His favourite song is Mouldy Old Dough by Lieutenant Pigeon, but I couldn't get a t-shirt of that.
No.
But anyway, so according to your, in your perfect universe where nobody...
Well, nobody else is actually, to be honest.
But so presumably there's a minimum amount of songs by the Ramones you have to know before you're allowed to wear
three. I'd say three. Then three songs you can have a t-shirt.
Right,
that should be the criteria we go up to tilt.
So, yeah, it should be. It should be.
So name three songs. So, what if they're a band far more prolific who've done dozens and dozens of albums?
Mm. Is it a percentage?
Do you have to name 40 songs by because they've done more songs? I mean, I've got a Bowie t-shirt and I've never heard any Bowie album after the Low and Heroes one.
No, I think
I have. There's one or two.
I think in order to wear a Guided by Voices t-shirt, you need to name all the songs.
Right. So your son can name all the songs.
Take it off him.
Yeah.
Take it off him. Off
him. I'm going to burn it. I can't believe what I've done here.
Yeah.
So, but anyway.
And also, while we're talking about this, I've seen pictures of possibly not your children, but certainly children nevertheless.
Yeah. Not all children of mine, if you understand. Yeah.
Wearing all sorts of things that they clearly know nothing about. Not just bands. Well, you know, fast cars. They have not driven a fast car.
You mean Fast Cars, the Buzzcocks single?
or motorbikes. No. If you've not been on a motorbike, you can't have the t-shirt.
Maybe they have been on a motorbike.
Well, okay, yeah.
It's a very restrictive form of capitalism that you're running.
So by extension, okay. One of my sons has got a Thomas the Tank Engine t-shirt.
Can he name the tugboat?
Do you know what? He can barely speak.
Get it off him!
But he can name a lot of things off Thomas.
Oh, I bet he can. Can he name the tugboat?
I don't know. I don't know. What is it called?
Can you name the tugboat?
No.
Right. No, well, it's a...
Kicker's question card the next time. It's the tugboat. But Thomas, thinking, now, talking of t-shirts, I can't help noticing, both you boys this evening are wearing the same t-shirt.
Well, you say that, but that suggests that we are squished in together, body to body, within one t-shirt.
Yeah,
and that's not the case.
On a coffee table. No,
the same design.
I should explain because obviously that wasn't clear. You are wearing your both
identical t-shirts,
but they are the same black t-shirts with the
identical name. T-shirts. Usually are
now again. Presumably, this is you took advantage of the bundle with the Morrissey album, and you ordered the album and the t-shirt.
Yeah.
Did you put the t-shirt on before you'd actually listened to the
album? Of course not. That would be heresy.
Okay.
Well, fortunately, the t-shirt arrived afterwards. But I've got to say, I was having doubts. I'm saying, I'm not really sure I want this t-shirt now because I've just listened to the second half of the album and I wasn't that crazy about
it. All right. Well, I've got it here in front of me. It's come out this week. So, world peace is none of your business.
Yeah, keep your nose out.
What's the verdict?
Fantastic. I'm a huge fan of this album. I'm not quite ready to review it definitively, but I've heard it over half a dozen times, twice on vinyl because the vinyl arrived yesterday. I think it's a great album. There are flaws and it's not perfect, and in fact I would say that there's a bonus disc, isn't there, with the CD, which I got as a download, and I think there are songs on the bonus disc which I would have preferred to have seen on the album,
two or three,
but overall I'm very happy with it. I think on the vinyl, side A is brilliant, the first three songs great. It dips a little bit on side C, but ends strongly. I think
I side really C. like. It's three sides. No.
There's four sides. One on one side, two's a double album.
Oh, right, okay. He's
Mr. Vinyl.
Yeah.
I first time I listened to it, I made a mistake in that I hadn't realised I'd got the deluxe edition, because it's a download, isn't it? So it just all arrives. Right. And first half of what I had, I was really enjoying it. And you particularly enjoy things like the palette of music is different from what he usually has.
It's richer, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's,
there's the Spanish guitar, there's castanets.
Yeah, that's what struck me.
Hand claps.
It's more musically diverse, certainly, than You Were the Quarry and Ringleader with the Tormentors and the one after that.
Years of Refusal, the last one. But I really like Years of Refusal and Ringleader with the Tormentors, the last two, which have been said that, you know, he's backed by a pub band.
I think I said that.
You did earlier on today. But I don't care. I stand up for both of those. I really enjoyed them. The second half of this album, I thought these songs are really going on a bit. And particularly in the deluxe end of it. So I listed the whole thing out, a whole 18
minutes. You were thinking that the whole thing was one album. Right?
I did, yeah, and I thought he's made a mistake there. But then I realised I was the deluxe edition bonus.
Which is
bonus.
an additional six songs.
Well, maybe that's why I'm more favourable towards it, because I've got here the I didn't get the download. Well, I probably can access a download somehow, but I've got the double CD. I'm old school. I haven't even listened to Disc 2, which is the six bonus tracks. I've just been listening to Disc 1.
Probably wise.
And the more musically diverse thing struck me immediately, particularly around the middle of the album, Science Staircase at the University and The Bullfighter Dies and Kiss Me a Lot and Smiler with Knife. All that Spanish guitar stuff.
Interesting.
Feedback
is one of the songs that lends in loads of feedback, which I really like.
Yeah,
as well.
and there's quite a bit of horns on there.
Can I introduce one element that I think is worth debating?
Yeah.
Egypt, Ukraine, so many people in pain. Is that a trite lyric? Doesn't he ruin? I mean, I've got issues with the politics on the first song anyway.
Something Bahrain as well, on there, doesn't he?
That's right. Yeah, that's a very trite lyric. That's like one of those where you see a Christian with an acoustic guitar singing, "I wish that we all got on together."
I think a lot of lines in a lot of songs that people like, you take them out of context, they can sound trite. It didn't strike me. I mean, I noticed that lyric. Yeah, when he was singing it, but in the context of the rest of the song. I think
there's some. It's not necessarily his strongest album in terms of lyrics, but I think there are numerous bon mots.
Yeah.
I wasn't feeling the bon mots. I used it, as I was saying earlier on, the great thing about the Smiths and Morrissey is that everyone's saying, "Oh, he's so miserable." And you think, well, I can see how you'd think that. But when I'm listening to it, I'm listening to lots of little vignettes and humour, and I always think they're missing a trick. I'm on the inside track.
The Bullfighter Dies, though, that made me laugh out loud.
What about all the...
He said that. What was the funny lyric in that?
What about all the kids as well, the disease-ridden kids?
It's a bit mean.
The little fella has rubella.
Yeah, brilliant.
But the Bullfighter Dies, it's not just the way... it's not just the lyrics, which are kind of funny, as
no
well.
Mercy in
but,
Mercy
yeah, but yeah. But also the just the way he sings it, and nobody cries. He does all this stuff. It just made me laugh. I don't really know why.
Yeah. It's a silly song. What you did say earlier when we were talking about this was that you were saying that the Kiss Me all over.
Kiss Me a Lot, Kiss Me a Lot.
You like that one.
Beautiful, beautiful.
That's a silly song to me.
That's right, and he always puts one of them in.
He says something about Kiss Me in Your Grandma's Backyard or something.
Yes.
Just not a euphemism, I don't think, but... possibly. But the song Smiler with Knife was an extraordinary song, isn't it?
Well, no, they'll debate this one.
Instrumentally, because it's...
It
starts off and then there's these weird noises coming in, and then it's just instrumentally, musically, it's quite. I haven't quite got my head around it.
I'm going to swell all the mobile. I was going to stir up some controversy then because Kicker had openly said earlier on that Smiley with Knife isn't working.
No, I don't like it. It's the only song that I on there that I actively. I skip at the moment.
No, I think it might grow into being my favourite.
Really?
But
see, that because would be it's more typically
it's,
contrary.
No, it's because it's the kind of thing you can listen to over and over again, and it's a bit like Life is a Pigsty of
which
I didn't like at first. It's now one of my favourite songs.
It's true to say that the songs that you like change over listens, and certainly on my first listen, for example, I thought. I'm Not a Man was the song that jumped out at me. That was the one on the first listen. I thought it was really good. Thereafter, I've kind of picked up on Staircase at the University. I really like. But latterly, I'm also thinking, what's the sort of Mountjoy is the one at the moment that I really, really enjoy. So
I was just looking down the track listing, and I can't remember Mountjoy at all. So that one must have passed me by completely.
But the last song as well is hilarious, isn't it?
Yeah, I love that one. Yeah.
Now you've pointed out what it's going on about.
Yeah.
Yes, that is very good.
Yeah. So are we all agreed that we like one of the songs?
We like
Oboe Concerto.
Yeah. Well, do we not all like Kiss Me a Lot? Kiss me a lot. Kiss me a lot.
I like your version with the sort of George Formby actions you're doing there. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Go on, let's play a song. Shall we? Yeah. Let's play Oboe Concerto then, because we all like that.
Let's play Oboe Concerto.
And he spoke with his voice, while he was talking with his mouth.
Concerto. All the best ones are dead, and there's a song I can't stand, and it's stuck in my head. There's a song I can't stand, stuck in my head. Oboe concerto, all I do is drink to absent friends, and there's a song I can't stand, and it's stuck in my head. There's a song I can't stand, and it's stuck in my head. The older generation have tried, sighed, and died, pushes me to their place in the queue.
Hear echoes of a Smiths song in the melody of that?
Yes, not a Smiths song. I said I thought I heard Margaret and the Guillotine in it.
All right. Yeah,
not that one then.
I didn't hear that. No, I didn't hear that one. I heard Death of the Disco Dancer.
Yes, okay.
Melodically. Cool. And
remember. You might not believe that, but I was going to say that.
Shyness is nice, and shyness can stop you from doing all the things in life you'd like to.
Dysfunctional songwriting partnerships. They are fascinating. It always fascinated me that Joel Strummer used to write the lyrics, then post them under Mick Jones's door so he could write the music. And, you know, the number of songwriting partnerships where we know they absolutely hated each other. And maybe that's inevitable because they all bring different things to it. But one of the songwriting partnerships that we know was incredibly dysfunctional was Glenn Tilbrook and Chris Difford from Squeeze. And we know it was incredibly dysfunctional because they put together a book, or shall we say Jim Drury put together a book, where he spoke to them independently about all the different songs. And it revealed what was going on both lives and how they felt about each other all the way through their songwriting partnerships, and was a surprise to both participants as well as to everybody else. But it fascinated me that Glenn Tilbrook seemed to have no idea of the troubles that Chris Difford was going through. The fact that he was suicidal and alcoholic seemed to completely pass him by. I think this comes together.
He was smacked out of his head, isn't it? He was doing heroin for the worst parts of that book. So,
Glenn Tilbrook was.
Glenn was, yeah.
Was he?
Yeah.
I read the whole book. I didn't pick up on that.
Were you on heroin when you were reading it?
Yes, I was.
Well, that's maybe why it's such a bar, yeah.
But I thought this is illustrated best with the song Domino, right? Where Chris Difford writes or says, because the song Domino is a bit light-hearted, shall we say. Chris Difford's reaction to this was thus. The lyric was my owning up to my bad behaviour. It's what people in recovery call step four programme. When you write down everything in your life which has gone wrong and share it with somebody else. I originally sang this song in the studio, and the song was much slower. It had a dark groove to it, which Ash and Hilaire really liked. It fitted my voice. But for some reason, the song was sped up and Glenn sang it, so my version never got to see the light of day. It was such a personal lyric that it was bizarre that Glenn should sing it. I was a bit upset about that. So you can sing, they never really understood each other. But to be honest with you, you can't improve this version of Domino. It's absolutely fantastic. But the fact that it documents his life form to pieces is a bit sad.
As could be, I fall
that you should say it's a very personal lyric, and it was a bit upset that Glenn sang it, because hundreds of his songs, his lyrics are very personal lyrics that end up being sung by Glenn. In fact, there's very, very few songs in which Christopher sings lead. Well, I think that's a bit of a shame sometimes, much as I love both their voices. But it's not an album. The album's called Domino as well, isn't
that's
it?
That's right, yeah.
It's the last one before they broke up for the, what, second, third, fourth time?
Second time.
And it's not an album I'm particularly familiar with. I do happen to know that since they reformed the last time, which was 2007, they've played songs off... It took them 5 years from that reformation before they played any songs off this Domino album. It's not an album that's very highly thought of by Chris.
No, they say that in the book, don't they?
But
he's
they
published
have,
it, hasn't he, Chris Difford?
Yeah, but they have played a song off it live in 2012. Do you know which is their only album that they've never played any songs from since they reformed in 2007?
East Side Story.
No, let me tell you, that's got all the big hits on it. No, not that one. No.
Ridiculous.
No. No, it's one called Play, which is two albums before Ridiculous.
Yes, of
one
course.
Before some fantastic plays.
Yeah.
I personally happen to think it's their best album and an absolute masterpiece. But you and I have this theory, don't we, Rebel, that Squeeze's albums of the 90s are their best. It's not a popular theory, but we both share this opinion.
I don't agree.
Their albums of the 90s, Play, Some Fantastic Place and Ridiculous.
Ridiculous, yeah.
Are the best albums they make.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
You disagree with that. Have you heard those albums?
I have, and in fact, I think I've got them all.
Yeah.
I haven't got this album, I haven't got Domino. Yeah. No, but East Side Story I really like, and all the big hits from the 70s we lost them.
Yeah.
No, they're as albums.
Goodbye,
I think.
Girl is still my favourite song, though.
Yeah,
but I think those early albums, they've got great tracks on them, but they don't hang together as an album.
And there are some real clunkers on them, to be fair.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
But the late ones, those three particular, are just all round magical works.
Argy Bargy and East Side Story, for my money, are the only ones that can even compete as a consistent album with the rest of them. The early ones, no, too much Jules Holland honky-tonk piano.
Yeah, I agree.
And the later one, too much overproduction and awful synthesizers, which I think is Glenn. It's been mainly responsible for that, unfortunately, or producers.
Mm. You look like you're going to read to us again.
Yes, sorry. I thought one of the fantastic things about Domino...
Bible reading number one!
..is that there's a song called To Be a Dad, which I don't know if you've ever heard it, but that is incredibly personal. Mm. And it's talking about having your kids taken off you, I mean, taken somewhere else, and how you'll never forget them, and all that sort of stuff. Quite sentimental, but really powerful. And at exactly the same time, Glenn Tilbury had split up with his wife, who moved to Australia and took the kids with him.
Right.
And Chris Difford just said, it was all about them. And Glenn Tilbury sung it, and so they did the song together. He'd wrote this lyric. It's obviously about him. And he says, I didn't think To Be a Dad was about me. Talk about a communication breakdown.
Okay, so the song I'm going to play next is actually one, two, three, four, five, six, seven singles that I bought as a box set on Record Store Day this year. And it really is a lovely looking thing. It's called The Space Project. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
I'll hand it over to you in a minute. I was going to read from the back of it. And it struck me, I didn't know what I was buying. One of these records that sometimes I buy, I like the cover. In this case, I like the backstory. And this is the backstory. It says on here, the source material for these tracks was originally recorded by the Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 space probes. So they're the ones that went up in 77, I think.
Yeah, ask me the year Love Me Do was released. And there.
It says, audible frequencies such as those made by musical instruments are caused by the compression of air or other gases and cannot propagate in a vacuum such as space. So you'd know that, wouldn't you? The songs recorded by the Voyager probes aren't sounds in the conventional sense. Rather, they're produced from electromagnetic radiation fluctuations in the magnetosphere of the celestial bodies studied by the Voyager probes. Personally, I like the trumpet. Anyway, this song is Jupiter, which you'll know as the largest planet, or possibly the bass player of the solar system. Thank you.
That was one of them, the instrumentals, wasn't it?
It was an instrumental. Did you spot the electromagnetic radiation fluctuation?
I to be honest, I didn't. And I really was listening for that as well.
Yeah.
Which is a real shame.
Did you spot the trumpet?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, I did, yes.
Yeah, you've got to miss that.
Really. I've got to say that. I mean, I listened to the whole of these songs 5 times.
Yeah.
As you
are required to.
That's right, yeah.
Contractually.
Then I looked down the list and I thought, what was that one like? Jupiter by the Antlers. And I listened to it again and I still saw it passing you by.
Yeah.
And
it's like it's in space.
It is. Yeah, I was lost in space.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can't honestly say I liked it because I couldn't remember it, even for 7 listens.
Well, I did like it, although I have to say I was listening to it, the first few times I listened to this one was in the car. It was all right, but and I quite like the fact it seems to kind of, some of it seems to be built around a sort of 9-beat, like 9 beats to the bar thing, which is very unusual in music. But that was kind of intriguing, and I was kind of quite enjoying counting the nines in it because I'm not a nerd like that. but then when I listened to it on headphones, it really came alive.
Yeah, I think you've got to do quite carefully.
Yeah, as with a lot of quieter music, it's a lot better on headphones.
Were you aware of this space thing?
Was I aware of space?
No, I know you're aware of space. You take up some part.
Yes, I live in it.
You did. I just wondered whether you knew the backstory to the.
I don't know of your little 7-inch box set there, but it is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
I did know a little bit about the Antlers.
I
bought this along to show you. This was a front cover mounted CD on Uncut Magazine a couple of months ago.
Oh, yes.
And it's various bands, most of whom I wasn't familiar with. Sharon Von Etten is on there, and I know you.
Oh, yeah. Don't like
you her. I thought you quite liked her.
Nah.
Lee Fields and Expressions. He's on Daptone Records, same as Sharon Jones and a few others that we've played.
Felice Brothers.
Yeah, they're all right. Dave Alvin, he's all right. Anyway, the Antlers are on it, doing a song called Palace. And it's absolutely brilliant. So good, in fact, that a couple of weeks ago, I ordered their album off eBay. It's fairly cheap on eBay. But it's coming from America. It hasn't arrived yet.
Ooh.
But the...
So what does it sound like?
Well, not very much like that. It's not instrumental. It's kind of acoustic. It's quite atmospheric, and it has got trumpet on it. So I think it must be the same Antlers.
Okay,
it can't be two.
There are other Antlers.
It could be two different bands called.
There's definitely
Antlers,
two Antlers
possible.
Yeah. One on each side of the head.
Yes, but it's kind of gentle. It's kind of piano-led track with a little bit of brass and very delicate, soft, quite high-pitched male vocals.
Okay.
It's fantastic, and it builds and it builds as it goes along. You may even be hearing it again on my end-of-year mix.
Ooh.
So I was kind of a bit disappointed with that song when I first heard it, because it didn't have the vocals on it.
Mm.
But what I wanted to tell you about also was when I bought that a couple of weeks ago, first place I often go looking, if there's a CD that's come out recently, first place I go looking is eBay, because a lot of people buy the CD, burn the MP3s, and then sell it off cheaper. I like cheap CDs.
Yes.
So I googled when I got this CD and heard this track, I googled it on eBay, Antlers.
Mm.
Just the band Antlers.
You can buy real Antlers, can you?
I tell you what, this is why it took me a long time to end up ordering this album, because it took me to the taxidermy section of eBay.
Oh, yes.
And I could have spied and buy anything, but
got to buy.
I tell you what, I've got a very little quiz for you.
Okay,
so in the taxidermy section of eBay on the day that I looked, what is the cheapest thing you can buy that's actually a real...
That's been taxidermed.
What you can buy is lots of, and they're very cheap, is little sort of black balls with a little spike on the end.
Does that count?
What you do with those is, if you've got an animal, for some reason when you're doing taxidermy, when you're stuffing animals, you don't use the real eyes. So you just get these little black balls on sticks and you stick them in where the eyes would be. They're very cheap, should you wish to buy any of those.
Right.
But apart from them, what is the actual thing that's come from an animal that was the cheapest?
An animal.
Or is an animal?
Testicles. Or, I'm
right.
No,
it's true.
Testicles.
No, I didn't see any testicles on available. I wasn't.
But really looking.
So it could be a part of an animal or an animal itself.
Or an animal.
There's a cheap taxidermed.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go. Rat.
Tooth.
Rat
is a good guess.
It's a part of an animal though. A whole rat would be quite expensive.
No, cheap. With rats everywhere.
10 a penny, aren't they? You're never more than 6 feet away from
a rat.
Stuffed rat.
Fewer than that in this house.
Yeah.
But I'm saying a tail. A rat's tail will be cheaper than a rat.
Or a tail itself.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, well, there were lots of rabbit's foot feet, but they weren't very expensive. Supposed to be lucky, that, aren't they?
Mm.
Not for the rabbits. Mm. No, it was a scorpion.
Wow.
For 99p, but for a pound, for 1 pound,
the extra penny.
For 1 pound, there was a guy.
You could get a guy.
No, wait. There was a set of fucking great big set of antlers.
Yeah. For a pound.
Starting price a pound, and I happened to notice, because I clicked on this, because I was thinking, why are these antlers so cheap? Basically, and they're in sale near Manchester, so not too far away from here. Basically, there was a guy who'd written a few lines about what he'd done. He's got a bar in Manchester or in sale, and he's clearly got loads of animal heads up on the wall and stuff like that. And he's obviously decided, right, these are I've got to get rid of these.
Yeah.
And he's selling them off for cheap on eBay. And he had antlers,
yeah.
Fucking great big set of antlers. He had buffalo horns.
Nice.
And he had a gnu's head.
Oh, yeah.
These are still
metal
on sale.
Metal gnu.
Metal
gnu. Is it you? Yeah, indeed. These are still on sale as of last night when I checked.
Right.
Now, next question. What is the most expensive animal on sale?
It's going to be a large
on eBay.
Got to be large, isn't it?
T-Rex. Tyrannosaurus, that'll be expensive.
Metal gnu.
By T-Rex.
just think for a minute. How are they going to stuff a T-Rex?
Probably not a T-Rex, is it?
No. Where would they get an actual T-Rex skin from?
Well,
you know what he's seen? You've seen that picture of what's his face, the director. Have you seen this?
Steven Spielberg.
There's a picture of Steven Spielberg next to a dead Triceratops, right?
Yeah.
Which somebody tweeted saying,
very, very stupid people have been saying, look at him, he's killed this animal.
Look, it really irates the whole thing. I don't care if it's a dinosaur, it's not human.
It's not right. It's not right. Yeah.
But anyway, I'm going to go for, I was going to say a whale, but shark.
Grizzly bear.
The answer is a rhino's head. A mounted rhino's head. Now, also what I discovered in this little eBay...
When you say mounted...
Yeah, no, don't go there. What I discovered in this little eBay thing was that if you've got like a vintage stuffed thing, particularly if it's stuffed by somebody who's a famous taxidermer...
To a certain
extent,
they're all vintage, aren't they? I mean, they're...
No, some of them...
They're still taxidermy animals.
Past. Yeah, but, you know, if you've got one that was stuffed last week... All very well, but if you've got one that's stuffed back in 1850 by one of the names,
Charles Darwin's mate,
by somebody who was a renowned
taxidermist,
then this is worth a lot of money. And this thing, did I tell you what it was, by the way?
Rhino's head.
A rhino's head. It was a mounted rhino's head, and it was stuffed by some, I don't know,
a famous person,
Dr. Fritz Wittgenstein,
a famous stuffer. Yeah, and it was how much?
Ooh.
How much for the
20 grand.
55,000, same as that drum kit.
10 grand. $9,995.
I'm close.
Under 10 grand. Next most expensive?
Was it a
rhino's arse?
No. We're put on the other side of the movie.
Lion's head.
It was a lion.
A full
lion is cheaper than a rhino's head.
Doesn't seem right.
There was also this seal, which had been stuffed by, you know, George somebody or other.
An American soldier.
George somebody or other. No, a seal.
An American
Navy seal.
Yeah.
But a real seal.
Yeah.
Shall we move on? Just a suggestion.
Yeah, get stuffed.
Well, we're coming to the end of the show now, and it's come to my attention that we've only played one song by our friends the Wild Eyes, and it seems to me that you can't have too much Wild Eyes. Oh yes you can. You can have too much the Wild Eyes.
Thank you.
remains to say goodnight from the Trust the Wizards podcast. From me, Rebel Ricket, and from Mr. Kicker of Hearts. And from Mr. Sharif Ogarbanza.
Ogarbanza.
Stay tuned to the blog, lots of interesting things happening there, and we'll see you again next time. Good evening.